Your story is waiting for you today. Your story has something new to say. But your story will only come out to play when you're alone. Alone. Alone in a room with invisible people.
The following episode may contain swearing. Alone in a Room with Invisible People is brought to you by hollyswritingclasses.com. Hi, I'm Rebecca Gallardo, the host of Alone in a Room with Invisible People, and I'm here with author and teacher Holly Lyle, and today's topic is Bad Habits Writers Have. Yes. So this is actually really fitting, and I'm just going to go into why, because two episodes behind, I believe it was our research episode, I was talking about how a screenplay needed to be written right now, and that it was, you know, because of everything that was coming up with all of the things I'm going through right now, that was it. It was like, it was a thing that had to be written. And as I was saying it, it felt like an excuse. And Holly even knew it was an excuse, but didn't say anything, because to her, she, you know, she feels that you need to figure this out for yourself sometimes. And I did. And I figured it out that day, because I even texted her or I talked to her afterwards or something like that. And I was like, it felt like an excuse. She's like, yeah, it felt like an excuse to me too. So this is a bad habit I have. And it's something that I know a lot of other people do. It's basically the whole moving on to something shiny thing. But yeah, so I asked people in the forums too, as well, to try to find my bad habit, and I didn't see anybody. Nobody seemed to have found it, which leads me to believe that a lot of people have this problem too.
And don't realize it's a bad habit.
Yes. And yeah. That also, I want to make sure that I mention this. If you want to be a part of our community, because like I said, I kind of was interacting with a bunch of people on this, just come on in to Holly's Writing Classes, you know, create the free account, and you too can, you know, interact with all of us on the forums, because we ask a whole lot of questions. We have polls and we have discussions on all of these topics. So we would
come up with ideas for upcoming episodes, stuff like that.
Yeah. We always ask for people's input, which actually this episode was built on the input of our writers, because we asked them in our community, what are some of your bad habits? And people were amazing. They really blew us away with all of their input, and they were very honest, and it was wonderful. So yeah, anyway, well, how was your week?
Well, my writing week was pretty good. I did 8 hours of bug hunting fixes on The Owner's Tale, which was my fiction writing allotted time, thanks to Patreon, is 1 hour per day, 5 days a week. And I did 8 hours, and I still have 60 bugs left that have to be fixed in The Owner's Tale. Along with that, I wrote a new chapter of Dead Man's Party, and I also wrote Lesson 11 of How to Write a Novel. So for me, it was a pretty good writing week. Got a lot of stuff done, and I'm pretty happy with the way it turned out. Although I will be very glad to have The Owner's Tale finished. That's going to be my next couple of days of fiction hour for my Patreon hours this week.
Okay, awesome. Was that it?
That was it for me, yes.
Okay, so let's go ahead and dive into bad habits writers have. And this is not an all-inclusive list. This is because, again, this podcast, we're limited on time. So if you feel by the end of this we haven't touched a bad habit that you have, absolutely come on into the forums. Let us know if there's any other bad habits. Maybe we could make a part two.
Right, exactly.
Okay, so what's the first bad habit?
The first bad habit is reading about writing. And this is one that I think everyone starts out with, because you legitimately want to know how to do this. So you read about writing from writers who are doing it, and that's fine. But at the point where you have read all the books, and or you have read 15 books, or you have read a bunch of books, and you are still reading about writing rather than writing, you are hurting yourself. And when we were, Becky and I were discussing this before we got started, she had a really good little story that she told about her and reading about writing.
Well, it wasn't about writing. It was about art.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, because I grew up with you, so I was always writing ever since. I don't remember the first time that I wrote, but the first time I tried to write professionally, I was 11 years old.
And so the reading about writing, although I do read a lot about writing, it's in my off time. It's never during writing time. My art, however, was a completely different thing. And I know that a lot of this, you know, the other bad habits, again, it's a mixture for me because I live in these two different worlds. It's art and it's writing. Art, I would watch YouTube videos, whether they were YouTube tutorials or I would just watch other people creating art, which I still do because it's inspiring and it's you can still learn from them. But my problem was I was doing this instead of art. I would literally come into this amazing little office that I have for art. It is my art studio. I would sit down and I would have that moment where this world, we don't want to be bored anymore. So the instinct is to go on your smartphone or to go on YouTube. And for artists, it's to, I'm going to watch somebody else create art. I'm going to watch an art tutorial instead of actually doing it. And the problem is you can read every book on writing. You can watch every YouTube tutorial. You can watch every Skillshare class. You can buy all the DVDs and the join every course that's out there and watch everything. And you have this amazing base of knowledge, but it's like listening to a lecture and not taking notes. 90% of that is going to go out of your freaking head.
Right.
So if you are sitting there and you are watching all of these art tutorials when you should be creating art or reading all of these books on writing when you should be writing, you are not going to learn anything. You don't know what you need to learn. Maybe you start writing and you finish your words and you realize you really need to learn about grammar. Like, you have all of this other stuff down, but damn, your grammar's bad. For me, I didn't know what I needed until I started drawing. The first time I did watercolors, it was god awful. I used it more like acrylic. But then I read, because at the time YouTube wasn't around, I read a couple of books from the library and I got better. That's the way you should really work on it. You know, in your off time, obsess, read, watch mm-hmm. your videos, you learn everything you can. But when you are supposed to be writing or drawing or creating, sit down and do it.
Right, right. And the next bad habit that we have here is putting writing last in the day. And this, I had to do this when I had two children who were 10
still
and
in diapers.
12. And oh, yeah, okay. then it was just any 5 minutes I could get. But when I had two children who were 10 and 12 and a newborn, I had to write the last part of the day.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, because I was 14 when Joe was born.
That's right, and 12. And yes, I keep forgetting how far apart in age you guys
yes.
are. Yes, and then the newborn. And I had to write at the end of the day, and I would write from like 10 p.m. at night until 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning because I had contracts and I had deadlines, but I did not have a lot of free time. But it was... I knew the place of writing in my life at that point. I had already established that this was how we paid the bills. And so there was no question of me giving writing short shrift. When you are getting started, you tell your brain the importance of things that matter to you by the order in which you do them. And if the very last thing you put after watching your TV shows and after going to the mall and after shopping on Amazon and after watching YouTube videos and after everything else, if the very last item on your list of things to do that day is write, then you are not going to do this. You are not telling your brain this matters. And if you want it to matter, you put it first. And sometimes, as when you guys were little, that means getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning and writing for an hour before the kids go to school, before they even get up to get ready to go to school, because that's when you have. And it's you decide the life that you want to build for yourself by the priority with which you assign what you say matters to you and what you prove by doing it actually does matter to you. And you can change this at any time. You can set up, if you have never done this before in your life, right now you can decide, okay, well, Writing has been last. Now I'm going to make it first.
Yeah. And that's, there is this very real scientific thing out there too. And you can look these up. It's called limited willpower. It's called decision fatigue. And those two things, if you are, you know, going on watching your shows, your stories, you're going on social media constantly. If you are just doing everything else first and then saving this for last, you're going to have decision fatigue. You're going to have limited willpower. You're going to be tired. Your brain is not going to be functioning fully for the one of the most important parts of your life. So, of course, like Mom and I had talked about before, we always saved Buffy. Like, that was a priority for us because that was a family time. That was our show. We all watched it together. That is different than watching this show and that show and this show and, oh, gotta catch up on that one and this one. Shows are nice, but you have to realize at a certain point they're addictive. It's in this world that we are living in right now, everything is built for your attention. Everything is built to be addictive. Your phone apps, your computers, YouTube, everything is built to keep you clicking and to keep you binge watching and to keep you there because that's how they make their money. So you have to learn to limit things to what is important. You have to put your priorities in order, and writing, if you want to be a writer, if you genuinely want to be a writer, you have to write and you have to make it a priority.
Yes. Okay. The third of these is imagining writing instead of writing. And this is where I started out. This is where I imagine most writers start out, is you imagine yourself with a New York Times bestseller and a line of 1,000 people that are waiting for you to sign their copy of your book. And somewhere along the way, it clicks in your brain, if you really genuinely want to write, that before you can have that amazing success, you have to start by writing. And that there, I really don't have a whole lot else to say about this, except that I have been there. And at the point where I realized, well, what do I have to do to make that magnificent life that I imagined happen? The answer was, sit your ass in the chair and write the book. And I was 24 when I discovered that. And it was New Year's Day that I wrote down, by the time I turned 25, I will have written my first novel. And I did. It sucked. But I wrote it. I finished it. And it was done before I turned 25. And that taught me that, well, I'm not very good at this, but I really like the work. And I'm going to do more of this because this is the thing that I have been waiting my whole life to figure out. This is what I want to do.
Yeah. And just, I can say that I've done, like, I started off writing, so I didn't have that beginning. And I think a lot of people maybe just want to pay their bills too. Because I think a lot of people are like me in that they're terrified of the fame, of virility of life, or virility might not be the right word, but they don't want to go viral. They don't, you know, there's a lot of writers that would love to be J.K. Rowling. I totally get that. But there's a lot of writers out there that just want to pay the bills. They just want to be able to help put money aside. And that was always my goal.
That's the reality of this for me.
Yeah.
But
a lot of people look at your reality as their dream. That is their dream. And that's how I look at it. And during points where you're not writing, so it's not always just a start off thing, there are times when you'll stop writing and you imagine it in different ways. Like, my thing was, if writing got too hard and I was stumped and I was just using other things as an excuse to not be writing, I would play Sims. And every single time, I had this character that was me. I'd made a Tony. And I know I mentioned this before on a different podcast, but my character was a writer. Sometimes a writer and an artist, but that's how she paid her portion of the bills, was she would sit down regularly and write. And eventually it came to my head, like, I'm living out this dream by creating a character and seeing all of this happen on screen. So it's basically the imagining writing thing, but I'm not doing it. So you really need to just stop the imagining. It was like my art for so long, I imagined being this great artist, but I rarely created art. And I would just imagine before I went to bed, you know, painting during the day after my writing. It was always after the writing and then painting. And finally, I just said, well, when is this going to happen? Either put up or shut up. You know, put out or get out. You know, it's get it done. Start now.
Right. Right. And that's the way that eventually, if you are going to do this, that's the way you're going to do it, is by saying, okay, well, now, if I'm going to do this, now is the only moment I have. So let me do this now. The next of our bad habits is letting ideas sit instead of writing them now. And this takes a tiny bit of explanation in that this writer was talking about, well, I have an idea, but it isn't a complete idea yet. So I want to have the idea for my story complete in my head before I sit down and write it. And this is a phantasm of the mind, okay? An idea is not a real thing. An idea changes shape. It is amorphous. It grows and shifts and falls to pieces and doesn't connect in a lot of places that you can't see until you start putting it on the page. At the point where it is out of your head and on the paper, it becomes a real thing. But the only way to make it a real thing is to put it on the paper and to build it on the paper. You cannot hold a whole book in your head. People think they can, and then they start writing it, and they realize, no, that wasn't the way I thought this was going to go, and I don't understand why it's going wrong, but it's not going wrong. It is becoming a real thing as opposed to being an imaginary thing. Everything imaginary is perfect, but the reality of writing it is not perfect. The reality of writing it is hard work and sitting there and getting your words per day and seeing what happens then.
That's why you get a lot of people saying, oh, I have the perfect idea. I just need a writer to do it. They don't actually, of course, it's perfect. Right. And I use this thing when we were discussing this before. It's like dreaming. When you're dreaming, everything looks real. Everything feels real. Everything is real in your dream. I mean, it's, but when you wake up and you start to think about it, or maybe you're like one of those people like me that writes dreams down, you start to realize how ridiculous it was. There was your cat from when you were younger was in your dream and it was them. But when you wake up, it was this white Persian and your cat was a gray, a blue Russian, you know, or a Russian blue. Or people can't actually morph into other people and be two people at once. And you can't fly while towing a tornado with you. So it's the same concept is when you're writing it down and you're finding problems, that is a good thing. You are finding the problems before they can mess up your story. You need to write down these ideas when they're imperfect,
right?
Because you're less likely to get discouraged and you're more likely to keep going. You have to realize that they're never going to come out perfect.
Right. And you are never going to have a complete novel idea in your head. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
All right, the next problem is phone games, solitaire, and sitting while doing. This is where you sit your butt in the chair and it is your writing time and you have committed this as your writing time, but you don't know what you're going to write. So you think, okay, I'll just play a game of solitaire while I come up with what I'm writing. And I am here to tell you that you can play 4 hours of solitaire and not come up with what you're writing. But, if you sit with your butt in the chair and your hands on the keyboard and you do not allow yourself to do anything until the words start to come, it generally takes about 10 minutes. And then all of a sudden you're writing because your right brain says, okay, I surrender. I give up. I'm not going to tempt you into playing solitaire so that I can just sit back here and fiddle around. Let's get this writing done.
Yeah, and 10-minute timers, Holly's 10-minute timer obsession is the perfect way to get yourself into this. There's two different things from Fly Lady. She said you can do anything in 15 minutes. And flylady.org, she's somebody who helps clean, organize, declutter. she goes for 15, we go for 10. I used to go for 15, but 10 minutes is like the magic sweet spot for I think most people.
Yeah.
But the 10 minute timer, and then there's one more thing she says, it's imperfect work still blesses your family. It's basically about, you know, cleaning up, but you're stifled by perfection. That's why everything is cluttered, because you can't get it perfect. It's the same thing with writing, is you're not putting it down because, well, it's not perfect. It doesn't matter. Imperfect words are still words on the page.
Right.
And with this world, the talking about just solitaire, but even let me check Twitter real quick, let me check Instagram, let me check Facebook, let me see if they liked my post, let me check my email because I'm waiting on something. All of this pervasive connectivity is a detriment to getting your words done and focusing.
Right.
And I'm reading a book actually on this topic right now called Deep Work by Cal Newton, or I'm listening to the audiobook. And this actually really, really motivated me, because you mentioned solitaire in, I think, the research episode. And I was like, wait a minute, Free Cell. Fuck, I love Free Cell. So I downloaded the app on my phone and I was playing it so much. And I realized, like, wait a minute, this is a problem. I am going to just get rid of all of the apps on my phone. So all I really have is Instagram. And especially now that you're on Instagram, if you guys are interested, it's holly.lyle, or you can just search up Holly Lyle. Her last name is spelled L-I-S-L-E. And again, it's not writing. It's just her personal Instagram. It's knitting and
basically,
cats right
yeah,
now.
Cats and knitting. Yeah. And I'll find some other things to put in there too. But, you know, it's small and I don't post particularly regularly. But
no, but it's there. Yeah. But yeah, so again, try the 10-minute timer. What I'm going to do is I'm going to set up a thing in our forums. It's the podcast forums. If you haven't joined Holly's writing classes, go ahead. It's free. You can become part of what I'm doing, is a 30-day 10-minute challenge, or 10-minute timer challenge. So if you have never done it, if you haven't gotten a shot, if you're not consistent about it, whatever your reason is, maybe you just want some other people doing it too, we're going to start a 30-day 10-minute timer challenge where you write to a 10-minute timer and you have to do it for the entire 30 days, because, you know, especially if you're just starting, the first couple of days, even the first week, is really tough, but you will start to get into it and it will start to become an integral part of your writing.
This is something where you are training your muse to show up for work. And when I started doing this, it was Natalie Goldberg's Writing Down the Bones. And she recommended writing to a 10-minute timer. And I thought that was the stupidest thing I'd ever heard. But I thought, okay, well, hey, let me give it a shot. And
yeah, because you said it was better than 5 hours of Free Cell.
Exactly. Because 5 hours of Free Cell was not getting the book done. So I tried the 10-minute timer. And it was brutal initially, because I did not allow myself to do anything but write to the timer. And I wrote for 10 minutes. And then I think it took me... I know that I had the technique nailed by the end of the month, but I think it took me about a week of being genuinely daily consistent with this. And then all of a sudden, my muse just showed up. It was like, there's the clicking of the timer, and I use a noisy timer. And the second it went tick, 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 tick like that, my muse went, oh, hey, it's time for me. And the story showed up. And
it was like Pavlov's dogs.
It was, yes. It was like training Pavlov's dogs, where you have this stimuli. And the stimuli in this case is, well, we're going to ring the bell and we're going to give the dogs food. And the dogs will salivate. And then you'd ring the bell and the dogs start to salivate because they know the food is coming. Well, you train your muse. You start this tick, 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 tick. And your muse will show up because it's like, this is what we do. There's my sound, there's my training, here's my words. And it has been the way that I have gotten stuff done for years now. And it is beautiful and simple and it works. All right, so the next one of these is starting something new in place of finishing something old. And this is hell week for a lot of people, because it is so much easier to start something new than it is to finish something. But until you have finished something, you have nothing. You cannot adequately revise a novel that you have not finished, because you don't know, until you finish it, you don't even know the story you're telling. You think you do, but the story will change. Your right brain will change it. You will bring in new things. And until you can see the whole thing sitting there, you don't know what you have. And you can polish garbage all day long, which is what rewriting first draft is, without having a finish. But if you want to do an actual revision, you have to have the whole book first.
Yeah, and this is something, like, I credit you with my creativity, you know, because you always encouraged that when I was a kid. And so a lot of this, I wouldn't even be a writer or an artist, I don't think, without that. But I credit my husband for forcing me to finish things, because it's between his support and his constant, he's very consistent, and he's very, very much a goal-oriented person. So his thing was, did you finish it? Have you finished it yet? Have you submitted? It's as soon as we met the first day, basically, he was supportive. And we've been together for almost 13 years. He, up until just recently, has never really had a reason to support me. He's never had any, he believed in me when I had given him nothing to prove in his belief in me. And a lot of people call that faith. But yeah, he definitely had faith in me, and he continuously asked, well, have you finished this? Have you done this? Have you done this? And it was never a nag. It was always oddly gentle for this full-blooded Italian Yankee jerk that he can sometimes be. You know, he's very abrasive and very rough with people. And when it came to this, he's always been supportive. And if I was in a bad mood, it'd be, well, go write something, go draw something. So when we first met, and we started dating and everything, he's like, I want you to submit a novel, because the very first thing that, even before we dated, I sold a poem for $3, and his thing was, that's great, now you got to do a book. I'm like, yeah. So I promised him on several occasions, yes, I'm going to submit a book for traditional publication. 10 years, it was 5 days after our 10-year anniversary that I finally submitted this book, that I finally paid off his belief in me in that one little way. Because his thing was, I want you to have 100 rejection letters. I want you to have all of this. But again, like Holly says, you can't keep starting new things. It's shiny. It's new. It looks like a better idea. It looks like an easier idea, because it's harder to finish the book you're writing now. Mm-hmm. But there's a reason that obstacle is there, and it is because you want to finish a book. So you're going to have obstacles to prove to yourself that this is what you really want in life.
To have the thing you want, you must finish. And that is the single most important thing you can do. All right. The next thing is doing other things during writing time. And this, again, takes a little bit of explanation, in that you, let's say you are now at the point where you are sitting your butt in the chair, you have your timer going, you're getting your words, and a friend calls, or a family member drops by, or it's Thanksgiving, post-Thanksgiving gigantic Christmas sale orgy at the mall. Whatever it is that you have people who are going to pull you away from, or things that you are going to pull you away from your genuine writing time, you have to learn to say no. And you have to be a bit of a dick about it. I mean, you don't have to be mean, but you have to be firm. You have to say, no, I am sorry. This is my writing time. You cannot expect that everybody is going to understand. You cannot anticipate that people are going to hold your writing time sacred, but you have to. And I say this as an atheist. There are things in my life that I hold sacred, and I understand what that means. This is something sacred, is your promise to yourself that you are going to use this part of your life for this thing that matters to you, that you are going to create something that will allow you to live on. And there is, you know, we all get the same 24 hours a day, and we all get an unknown amount of time in which to do whatever it is we choose to do. And you can get to the end of your life and realize you did nothing but watch reruns of I Love Lucy. Or you can get to the end of your life and say, no, okay, I did what I set out to do. I wrote as many books and as many stories and as many things as I could in the time that I was given, and I'm glad. And that's the choice that you make right now and every minute, is who do I want to be today?
Yeah, and something that I just have two things to say with this. The first thing is there's this pithy little remark, but it does apply here. It's those who matter won't mind, and those who mind don't matter. And that's it's a little, you know, black and white, but it really does. When I was working full-time Etsy, I was making jewelry all the time. I got to spend a little bit more time with my husband, but we had friends that were constantly on me to hang out with them. And I would go maybe once or twice a month because I'm sorry, I have orders. And their thing was, you know, well, I get that you're paying some bills with this, but you make your own hours. Can't you wait? Well, I'm sorry, if you're inviting me to something every other day, every 3 days, no. No, I can't go to this bike run. No, I can't go to your house to hang out for something. And there's a point where, it's nice that they want you around, but they're also not respecting your business. They're not respecting what is important to you, what is sacred to you. And even that had more credibility than writing, because writing to other people, it's this intangible thing. You can do it anytime. You can do it anywhere. And that's just not how it works.
No, and it's not.
It's like, I'm sorry. Yeah, I make my own hours, but there's a reason why I choose these hours. And I'm sorry that's, you know, I don't get to hang out and drink with you, but this is more important. The second thing that I wanted to say is stick with it. A friend of mine, I can't really give any details, but a friend of mine had no support from his loved ones at all. Now, he's not a writer, he's an artist, but he was constantly actually being antagonized by his loved ones. This doesn't matter. Why are you wasting money on this? Why are you doing this stuff? It's not even good. You're never going to sell any of this. And this is something that has been just on him his entire life, pretty much, with all of his loved ones. And he finally, you know, he had a single goal in mind. He and one other family member that he does have that, you know, supported him, worked together on this one goal. And they got it set up. So he did this massive amount of work to create this just incredible amount of items from scratch. He did something over 100 items in less than a month's time. I think it was a month time that he had. He created all of this work. And he has a full-time job that has him on call. He is dealing with bad weather. He has family, kids and obligations and a wife. And he is just as busy as the next person. But he made it a priority. He finished his work. And he got the payoff of a ton of sales. And he got to prove with his actions, with his work, with the end goal, that his loved ones were wrong. And he didn't have to be a dick about it. He didn't have to say, I told you so. He just, his work spoke for itself. And I don't know that it's going to fix your situation if you get a sale. Your people can still shit on you. But you have to believe in yourself. And you have a community of people who will support you. Because that's one thing he did have. He had an art group. We have Holly's writing classes. If you don't have anybody in your life that supports you,
get
you have
somebody
to support yourself. Yeah.
Yeah,
and you can find friends. There are tons of places online. Online friends can be just as invaluable as real life friends.
Yes. All right. Okay, the next thing after that is research. And we have done an entire episode on research. So the high-speed version of research is, if you have something, you are writing along and all of a sudden you realize you don't know something, the way you deal with this is you write in left bracket, capital T, capital C, hyphen, which means to come. And then you write in the question, what do I do with detective work? Or how does a detective know when to pick up evidence? And then you put a little square bracket at the end of that, and then you go right on pretending as if you already have the perfect answer there.
Yeah, or like whatever your problem is. If you don't know something about small towns, if you need to create this thing in your magic system that you haven't done yet and you need to research for it. The reason Holly says the left bracket, right bracket, the TC and all that stuff is because it's searchable.
Mm-hmm.
I used to just highlight stuff, but this is a much better way. Now, we did do a full episode on research, and I will make sure to put that in the show notes for anybody who needs to to stop researching when writing. But yeah, we wanted to still cover that because it was still mentioned in the Bad Habits episode.
Yes.
Or forum.
Yes, exactly. Okay, the next thing here is thinking this was better in my head. And this is a form of magical thinking in which you hold the idea as more important and better than a physical reality. A lot of people do this. It is a very hard habit to break. But the thing you have to realize is that the idea in your head seems better because it has no form. It is amorphous.
It's magic.
It is magic. And it can be, and it will tell you that it is anything that you want it to be, just so that it can stay there in your head as this unrealized reality. At the instant that you take an idea and you start putting it on the page, the creation of fiction is the death of a perfect idea, because the idea is not real. The fiction is, and the fiction can be made good, but first you have to get it on paper. And when you have an idea, you have nothing. There is abso-fucking-lutely nothing you can do with an idea. With words on a page, you can do that. You can finish a story, and then you can fix those, and you can make the story as good as or better than what you thought the idea was.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is just get to working.
Yes. Okay, the next one was searching for the perfect word. And this is the infinite time sink, because there is always a better word. If you haven't got your idea nailed down and you don't have your story in fixed form, everything is always better than what you have. It is only in the process of revision that you have any sort of objective way of knowing whether that word will actually be better or not. So you can waste your entire life going through and finding better words for unfinished first draft, but until you have finished something, you still have nothing, whether you have perfecter words or not.
Yeah, and you can put notes in there too, because I used to do this and just highlight, and I'll put, you know, better word.
Yeah.
I literally put that in parentheses and highlighted them. Sometimes I needed one, sometimes. But the thing is, when you're writing, you think everything should be better, or you're in the flow, you think everything is perfect. When you're in revision, you'll know whether or not you need better words.
Yes, that's because the then your left brain is doing what your left brain does. Whereas when you're in right brain, the left brain is going to be telling you stuff is shit just because the right brain wants to do stuff, or the left brain wants to do stuff and wants to squelch the right brain, because it's like that.
Sitting there doing nothing while your right brain is doing everything, and you have to just let it know, okay, if it needs a better word, you can handle it in revision.
Right.
That's the thing, is it wants to take over. You can't let it. You have to be strong, and you have to save it for revision and just let it know. You're going to get the entire revision. Shut up.
Yes, exactly. Okay, here's one that I think is fun because technology lets us do this now. Building book covers for unfinished work. And this was not a problem back when I got started. It has become something of a thing now, in that because I am doing a lot of indie publishing, I am making a lot of book covers. And I know this has been something for you too. So why don't you take this one?
Yes. Okay. Well, this one was especially because I was creating a lot of stories, a lot, something like over 50. And each one had its own book cover. And then all of them would, you know, I would put together compilations, and those would have their own book covers. So I would have to buy the stock photos so that I could know how to describe the characters. I've written so much stuff that I'm not picky about how certain characters look. I let the stock photos determine that for me, just to an extent. And So I would have these stock photos here, and I would go ahead and create the work or the cover before I finish the book. And when you create the cover, it's for you, I know it was like this concept of this million bestseller, and it would go and just everybody would buy it. For me, it was a subconscious desire to have the book finished and to have part of it finished. But it was also because you're writing and you're in your right brain, it's also the left brain. And this was a weird thing to realize. It was the left brain wanting to do something too. And because creating covers is this really perfect balance of left brain, right brain, all working together at once. And the left brain gets to nitpick everything. And the right brain is okay, because as the left brain is nitpicking fonts, the right brain is like, ooh, I get to play with fonts. You know, it's just this amazing working together. And so it's that, but then it's also the feeling of a completion. But when you're done making the cover, you have this emptiness. It's a feeling of euphoria and then an emptiness, because you still have to do the book.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did was I would leave the cover as the reward, as like you were saying, it's a reward, and I completely agree. The cover is the reward for having finished my first draft of the story. Because after I finished the first draft of the story, which were always about 3,000, maybe 4,000 words, I would send it off to my beta. Then I would take a day or two to create the cover, and I would just go at it full steam, you know, left brain, right brain, throw everything at it in the world. And it's fun because the right brain gets to try everything and the left brain gets to shoot everything down. So... And there's no bickering. And then by the time I was done with the cover, I would have my beta readers come in. I would take that day to finish up the beta reader notes, and then I would publish.
Right.
So that is the way to do it, is to save it as the reward. Now, if you hate creating covers, I'm sorry.
Yes. But then if you hate creating covers is not going to be one of your bad habits.
Yeah, very true.
Okay. Adding new projects. And this takes a tiny bit of explanation in that it is very tempting. Once you get into a flow with a book, and once you are used to doing a whole book from start to finish, and then doing another book from start to finish, and you know how this works, it is very tempting to start in with, okay, well, I can be writing one while I'm revising a second, while I'm making a cover for the third. And Piers Anthony was the guy who gave me some really sharp direction on this, which is, I have three processes, he said. I write a first draft of one book while I am writing while I'm going through the revision of the second draft, and while I am coming up with the concept for the third book. But I do each of these things in its own time and in its own way, and in sequence, so that I have a process. And at the point where you are routinely finishing your work, where you are routinely writing stories and finishing them, then you can look at starting new projects while doing old projects. But until you have gotten there, don't do that.
Yeah, and I use the analogy that you guys, that your people like to say, and that you like to say, it's playing the game on hard mode.
Yeah.
That is Holly. Holly does nothing but play every game on hard mode, basically, in real life, in her writing and stuff. If you have never played a first-person shooter, you're not going to start one on the insane level where everything is as hard as possible, even getting the loot is as tiny as possible. You have to start a game at maybe the easy mode, and in writing, there is no easy mode, but at least writing one thing is keeping your focus. You don't want to do, as Holly had this, she has an article on a busman's
holiday, yeah.
Busman's holiday. She was writing a book that was stressing her out, and Matt said, well, why don't you just take Fridays and write something you want to write? So that's what she would do. Monday through Thursday, she worked on this first book, and she tried to keep her word count. She always got her word count right. And then on Friday, she would write the book that she wanted, and it gave her this mental space and this ability to breathe. And it's the same thing, but again, this is what she was capable of doing at the time.
I had written and published a lot of books at that point.
Yeah, exactly. She had, so for even for somebody who like me, I've been writing for 24 years, or longer, but I've been trying to professionally write for 24 years. I have found that I can't really do two works at once. I can do something like revise an older story or create a book cover for something else while I'm working on a new story. That sort of thing I can do. You have to know your limitations and you have to be okay with them, because limitations help create space and creativity in your mind. If you set limitations on yourself, you're going to get creative in how to grow within them.
Yes. Yes. That is an excellent, excellent point. Okay. Next here, we have using external pressure instead of internal desire. For example, waiting for the last minute to start playing chicken with your story. And this is where I live. I was at one point, I had a couple of different things I was doing. I was keeping up with a blog. I was keeping up with a website. I was keeping up with a writing community. I was doing one deadline book, and I don't remember now which novel it was, but I fell behind on my deadline because I am an adrenaline junkie, and if you fall behind on your deadline, then you get the adrenaline payoff of having to push hard to get the story done. And, you know, this is ER nurse me, where that's why I worked ER. This is who I am. I was like this when I was a little kid. And my father would tie a rope to the back of the snowmobile on the ice in the river in Alaska. And I would hang onto the rope and ice snow ski behind a snowmobile over jumps and things when I was 10 years old. Serious, bad, bad, bad adrenaline junkie. And this was where I got my thrill, was by having to do progressively more difficult deadlines, so that at one point I had to write 10,000 words a day in first draft to hit my deadline. And I got the adrenaline kick out of that I wanted, but at the same time, once I was done, I was so burned out that I couldn't write anything for a while. You may be an adrenaline junkie too. And what you might discover is that external pressure, which is, oh my God, I've got to meet this deadline. If you miss the deadline, you're screwed and your reputation is screwed, and there are better ways to get your adrenaline junkie on. And
yeah, like for instance, we were talking about this before, and mom finally admitted after we talked about it for a little bit that she chooses the life she lives, and some of it is, you know, for money, but you have set your life up that way so that this is the work you have to do to make the money you make. Mm-hmm. And the fact that she is writing a class 1 week ahead of the class, writing a book, and was writing another book at the same time. So technically she was writing two books and a course that she was, it's a splinter course. So everybody gets it the week after she finishes right. It or the couple of days after she finishes that week.
Generally one day after I finish the lesson.
Yes. And then on top of everything else she has to do, she's worried she has to fix the site, work with Dan on the site, but then she also has to edit the class and create other explanations for things that maybe some people, their brains don't work the same
right.
way.
Answer
so this is all
in
adrenaline for her.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is the way I live my life because this is who I am. But I have learned to give myself a little bit of breathing room. Not so much with the nonfiction where I am writing at most 2 days ahead of people who are going to get the lesson 2 days from the day I finish it. That's the best I have done so far, is 2 days ahead of them. Sometimes it's like 15 minutes. I have not been late yet, but, you know.
But she has been in the past.
I have just been in the past.
You know,
yeah,
shit happens.
Yeah, shit happens.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, and that's what you go into a splinter class knowing is, well, you know, there are going to be some typos in the lessons. And every once in a while, one is probably going to be late because I'm going to have to figure out the technique. And I am yes. building these techniques as we go. So,
yeah. And if you don't understand it, that's another thing in the splinter rules is like, if you don't get it, tell her, because that's another part that she has to do, is she has to try to build the system so that it explains it to as many brains as possible.
Right. And everybody has a build-it-yourself brain, and none of them work the same as anybody else's in most regards. So you have to find a bunch of different ways to show people how to do this thing that to you is very straightforward. And you realize how different people's brains are when what's straightforward to you is clearly bewildering to someone else. And you have to...
like the dot and the line.
Oh, God, the dot and the line. Holy fuck. Anyway.
Yeah, so yeah, this is the Adrenaline Holly.
Yes.
Don't be like Adrenaline Holly.
Yes. So what you want to do is give yourself reasonable goals. And then we'd already talked about the 10-minute timer. You set up for a number of words that you can sanely do every day. And then you just, if you want to write more some days because you're in the flow and everything is coming together, that's great. But we will get to that a little bit later on here. We're almost down to that part of it. Okay, so the next thing is following your muse on every idea. And what this means is being insanely distractible and never finishing anything, because your muse ideas are easy. People did not believe me when I said ideas are easy. So I showed them how to make an artifact and how to get a ton of ideas from one artifact. And all of a sudden people are going, oh my God, I thought that was kidding. I didn't realize you meant that ideas were genuinely easy. But
yeah.
I can knock out 100 ideas at a rate of about 1 a minute without slowing, without faltering. Ideas are easy.
And the more you write, the more that you see that is true.
Oh, yeah. The more you do this, the more you realize how easy an idea is. So you don't waste your time chasing every idea that flits through your head, because you will make more. And you can make more anytime you want to. You know, if you have something that feels fantastic, you were talking about writing down.
So Holly is so advanced that she has a different relationship with her muse. You say to your muse that, yeah, if it's such a great idea, you'll remember it. Hit me up later.
Right.
But for some of us in the more me stage, or even earlier, you know, you haven't been writing that long. It's called a brain dump. And when it comes to to-do lists and stuff like that, like your brain is always racing and you have so much shit to do. This is from Getting Things Done by Dan Allen. You just have a book or journal or notebook or something where you write down your ideas, or an app or a computer program, and you write down all of the to-do lists. And then you'll have breathing room in your brain. You'll be calmer. You'll be more sedative.
Yes.
It's just, you won't feel as much anxiety. And coming from somebody who has an anxiety issue and ADHD, I can attest to this intensely. And it's the same thing with writing. If you are writing and you're working on something and your brain, I used this story before. It's like if I'm writing a perfectly normal romance novel, my muse will get so bored in a way. It loves what I'm writing, but at the same time, nothing's exploding. Nobody has killed somebody with magic in their brain, or there's no ghosts. That's a big thing. Why is there no paranormal? And it's like, shut up. But you can't just tell it to shut up. You want to support your right brain too, especially when you're new. So you create a muse book. You have a dedicated space where your muse knows 100% that this is a safe space for the ideas. You won't lose it. You know where it is. You write down the idea, not while you're writing. If you're doing a 10-minute timer, get to the end of the timer. Just tell your muse, hold on. You get to the end of your session, and then you write it down in the muse book. And if it is a dedicated book where your muse knows the idea will stay there and not go missing, it will calm down and get back to work on whatever you're working on.
Mm-hmm.
And I had it the opposite way too. When I was writing Glass House and there was all this magic and all this everything else, the muse was like, you know what? I have this really great idea for a romance novel. It's super simple, way easier to write than this. Maybe we should do that. So I had to calm it down and write down the idea. And then I got back to Glass House. So no matter what you're doing, your muse is going to throw something at you.
A distraction.
Yes.
Yes. Because it's 6 years old, perpetually. It is this little kid, and it likes to play. And no matter what you're playing, there is a shiny new object out there that it will find and throw at you, and you have to be able to deal with that.
Yes, and not everything needs ghosts.
Yes. And then our final thing here is what I call writing to failure. And this was where I started getting into that whole 10,000 words a day thing, where I was pursuing my adrenaline junkie. I was feeding my inner adrenaline junkie. And I was writing 10,000 words a day. And at the point where I got to the end of that, I damn near died. I couldn't write fiction to save my life. I was having a hard time with blog posts because I had to do it, so I did it. But it was a brutal, brutal grind. And what you will discover is that it is entirely possible to push yourself to the point where you can do the work, but you don't want to do the work anymore. You can make yourself hate writing. And this is the same as, you know, training Pavlov's dog. If every time the dog comes running over at the sound of the bell and you give him an electric shock, dog is going to stop coming over. And and you can mistreat your muse in the same way that you can treat your muse well. So what you do is you set a minimum acceptable word count, and you make this something that you can do on your shittiest, worst day. Everything is going wrong. Someone who drives you nuts is over at the house, and being loud and singing in the kitchen off key, or whistling. There you go. Because Becky hates whistling.
No, I would punch him in the mouth.
So, yeah. So somebody is doing stuff that just drives you up the wall, and you are going to be able to get your words anyway. And make it a reasonable number, 250 words, 500 words. You can write a novel a year on 250 words a day. And that's taking weekends off. Make it something that you can live with, and that no matter how obnoxious your house guest is and how much you want to wrap him in newspaper and throw him out with a dead fish, you can still get those words. And those words are the words you get up in the morning and you write those words. And then, if you want to keep going because you're having fun, keep going while you're having fun. And the second it starts to grind, stop. And the next day, you don't come in and write up until the point where you had fun. You write your minimum daily words again. And again, if you want to keep going, that's fine, but you don't have to.
Yeah. Yeah, and for me, it's basically like so I have a minimum word count for bad days, for busy days, that sort of thing. And then I have a goal word count. And it used to be smaller. Right now, it's basically the minimum word count is about 500 words. The bigger word count is I want to finish a chapter.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll write two scenes of 1,200 words for the chapter. And that's because I have the time. So, and I've been writing for a long enough time to know that I can hit this and still be excited about the next scene.
Right.
One thing I want to say is that if you are constantly writing and you're writing because you're in the flow, even though you're tired, and it's like every single day you show up and you just keep writing because you're in, you know, you're excited, but you're starting to become less and less and less excited over a period of time. The thing that you want to do is leave when you're excited.
Right.
Leave when you're still happy about the work. Leave when you can't wait to write the next thing, because that feeling won't go away. You might have a bad day. Yeah, you might have another a bad day that kills the excitement for that day. Shit happens. But if you are excited when you sit down and you are excited when you leave, you will generally, 99% of the time, I think, be excited to sit down the next day. Yeah, right. It sucks to have to get up at like maybe 4:30 in the morning and you're exhausted and you have to make coffee and all this and that. But if you create, and this is something that I'm doing myself too, if you create kind of a ritualized routine surrounding your sacred writing time, it is like the same thing as the timer. It is the same thing as the Pavlov's dogs. Let's say you have a cardigan you wear every single time you write, and that's all you do. I used to like to write in the cold, so Mom made me some fingerless gloves, and I think I bought some fingerless gloves, and she made me a shrug. It was the shrug you made me.
Yes,
and
shrug.
I bought the fingerless gloves.
Yeah.
And that shrug and those fingerless gloves were my writing thing. So I would put them on and I would instantly, I'm like, okay, I'm ready to write. So you just do what you can, even a small thing, even if it's just lighting a candle in your space or something like that. If you can ritualize the event, it will help put your brain, it's a neurological link that helps to put your brain in the right space for your muse to come out and play.
Yeah.
And it's just remember, you can leave when you're still happy and excited and your muse is ready to play.
Right. There is no guilt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So is there anything else you got a takeaway for us?
I have a takeaway. I do indeed. Okay. And this is, I've got six things here. Write first on your writing days. Now, not every day has to be a writing day, but you decide which days you're going to write. And on those days, put writing as your first priority. Two, dare to do nothing at the keyboard. If you are sitting at the keyboard and your muse hasn't shown up for work yet, don't read email, don't browse the web, don't play solitaire, just sit there staring at your open document with your hands in your lap until your muse shows up. Because if your muse sees that you are that serious that you will sit there and do nothing, your muse will show up. Next, turn off the distractions. And this is not as easy as it sounds, because a lot of life is your cell phone rings and it's somebody you have to take a call from, or someone knocks at your door and you have to go pick up your Amazon package. But where you can, turn off your distractions. I know a lot of people subscribe to things that make their phone ring constantly with little updates.
Yeah, the notifications of the apps and this is pervasive connectivity that we have.
Yeah, I don't have those on my phone. I don't have a single thing that on my phone that updates, that gives me a notification, because I don't care. I have things that I will check and I will go in and check later, but not while I'm writing.
Now, there is a app. There is a couple of apps. I'm not going to name anyone in particular, but for people who want to leave their phone normal, but maybe need just an hour of space or something like that. If you have a specific amount of time, you can download an app that will basically turn off all the notifications. You can pick which apps you want to shut off, so your phone will still ring, so your text messages will still come in. If you are a parent or a spouse and you are constantly worried like I am, I always leave the phone number or the phone and the messaging on.
Oh, yeah.
But you can turn everything else off for a time limit and it will not send you notifications. But with the way that this society is created, everything is meant for you to binge watch, to binge attention to everything. It is meant to be addictive. And in order to create this kind of thing that we're talking about here, you have to be able to shut that off for a while.
Yeah, you have to be willing to do it too. And for people who are addicted, this is not an easy thing to do, and I'm not saying that it is, but if this is what you want, this is how you get it. Okay, the fourth thing is finish everything you start. No matter how much it sucks, no matter how much you hate it, by the time you get to the end of it, finish it anyway. Because everything you finish is something that you can revise and improve. Everything that is unfinished is nothing. There is absolutely nothing you can do with unfinished work. But finished work, yeah, you can build a career on that. Okay, the next thing is to remember that ideas are nothing. Only words count. So you can have all the ideas in the world, but until you sit down and start giving them shape and form in reality, the idea is nothing. And finally, and this one is one to just kind of stick in your pocket and carry around. If it were easy, everyone would do it. It's not easy, but it's doable. And it is doable in small steps. And if you want this, you can do this. So with that, I will look forward to seeing you next week. And in the meantime, take a chance on yourself, believe in yourself, and write, because you can do this.
So that was our episode on bad habits. And I think we mentioned this before, but again, I'll just say, if you have any bad habits that you feel weren't covered, or maybe a different side to the bad habits that you kind of, you know, still need an answer on, just let us know in the forums, in the post regarding this particular episode. And if we get enough, you know, maybe we can make a part two, or maybe we can just make a quick mini episode to help a couple of people out. But that was our episode. Holly had to leave, so I'm just going to go ahead and say for both of us, thank you so much for listening. You can follow us on the socials. I know we don't do very much on social media at the moment, but it is on Twitter and Instagram. It is at AIARWIP. You can also search the hashtag Alone in a Room with Invisible People, or Alone with Invisible People. We are on Facebook at Alone in a Room with Invisible People. Our website is alonewithinvisiblepeople.com, and you can leave us a comment, say anything. You know, you can find all the episodes and stuff there. Our email is show@alonewithinvisiblepeople.com. The forums, if you want to become part of the community, I know we mentioned this a couple of times, hollyiswritingclasses.com. They are free. Just create a free account. They are protected, so you can go ahead in there and share your stuff and just kind of find your people. We have a Patreon now. It is Alone in a Room with Invisible People. I believe you can search Alone with Invisible People as well. We created the Patreon because of listeners who wanted to support us, you know, and any amount, really, it makes a big difference. So we have three tiers. Currently, we have no rewards, but we are working to change that in 2019. And if you do have an idea for rewards, I'm going to create a forum topic for this so that you guys can kind of help us, let us know what it is that you would like to see. Please keep in mind that Holly won't be able to do very much as far as the rewards. There won't be any extra podcast episodes. So we're trying to limit the amount of time that she has to invest in the podcast, because we want to keep it free and keep it light amount of work for her. That's why I'm producing it and doing everything else as well. We also have, if you felt more comfortable with a one-time support of the podcast, if you go to alonewithinvisiblepeople.com, on the right-hand side, on the very top, there is a donation bar. And it's just basically three different tiers of support there as well. We are still doing our books for reviews. So Holly has a book called Squick Studies. It is set in settled space. It's a short, I think it's a novella. I have Good Bones. It is also a short, and it is a paranormal story. So don't forget as well, if you're interested in doing the 30-day challenge, I'm going to create a forum post in our podcast forums and just kind of create something there that we can start on December 1st and just kind of be a part of the community, trying to maybe improve the words we are writing at the time, trying something new, and trying to keep our focus. So again, you know, like Holly says, you can do this. If you have any questions, if you have any issues, we are here to help. Have a great week, and we look forward to seeing you on the next episode.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
You want to write, you love words, you love fiction, but you don't know where to start, or how to middle, or where to finish. I do. I'm Holly Lyle, and I've been doing this professionally since 1991. And I know how I did what I did to go pro, and I'll be happy to show you what I've learned. Start with my free 3-week flash fiction class at hollyswritingclasses.com.